Matthew 23 is a record of part of what Jesus would say in the last week of his life. He spends most of that time in and around Jerusalem. And instead of calming down the tone of his teaching, he ratchets it up. He says some things that I think are important for them to hear and are important for us to hear. And what Matthew 23 is, it's a record specifically of these strong denouncements of the scribes and Pharisees. If I said to you, when I said to you, we're going to study from Matthew 23, many of you probably in your mind said, that's a statement about the woes to the scribes and the Pharisees, and you would be right because we recognize that. But he spoke to his disciples and he spoke to the multitudes, and probably some of the scribes and Pharisees were among the crowd that he spoke to. And if they were, they would not have liked what they heard. And I want us to read tonight, beginning in verse 1. I'm going to just read, take parts of this and read it and make some comments about it. And then we're going to look at one other passage to make an application, and then the lesson will be yours. Beginning in verse 1 of chapter 23. Then Jesus spoke to the multitudes and to his disciples, saying, "The scribes and the Pharisees sit in Moses' seat. Therefore, whatever they tell you to observe, that observe and do, but do not do according to their works, for they say and do not do." These were people who sat in Moses' seats. That was the idea. That gave the indication that they were the transcribers of the law. They were the readers, and they were the teachers of the law of Moses. And so those who wanted to know about the law would go to the Pharisees. That was their place. That's what they wanted to do. And when they read from the law of Moses, they would stand. And when they were finished reading from the law of Moses, they would sit. And they would sit and expound on the reading which just had taken place while they were standing. And so they, out of respect for the Word of God, would stand. And then they would sit to expound on what it was that they said. And verse 3 tells us what Jesus said about them. I find this interesting. He says, do what they tell you to do, but don't do what they do. Isn't that interesting? It'd be kind of like saying, you know, listen to what the preacher says, but don't act like him. And while there are probably things, there are things that I wouldn't want you to do like I do them. If I felt strongly that what I was preaching was right, but yet I didn't want you to do what I did, I would find it hard to stand before you and preach if there wasn't some sense in which I thought that I was at least trying to implement and do what it was that I asked of you. Or at least what it was that I told you that God was asking of you. But yet Jesus himself said, you need to listen to them because they're going to tell you what you need to do. But don't do what they do. And then verse 4 beginning talks about their actions. And I want to read these verses. And I just want you to envision, just imagine that you're in this audience among the multitude and the disciples, and you're hearing Jesus say this. And imagine specifically that you are one of the scribes or the Pharisees, because he would say this beginning in verse 4. This is about why you don't do what they do. He says, "For they bind heavy burdens, hard to bear, and lay them on men's shoulders, but they themselves will not move them with one of their fingers. But all their works they do to be seen by men. They make their phylacteries broad and enlarge the borders of their garment. They love the best places at the feast, the best seats in the synagogues, greetings in the marketplaces, and to be called by men, Rabbi, Rabbi. But you do not be called Rabbi, for one is your teacher, the Christ, and you are all brethren. Do not call anyone on earth your father, for one is your father who is in heaven. And do not be called teachers, for one is your teacher, the Christ." That's a pretty explicit statement about what they did that was wrong. And Jesus said, you don't need to do that. You don't need to act like that. And I like what he says in verse particular. When I say I like it, I think it states something about who they were, because in verse 5 it says, "But all their works they do to be seen by men." Now I want you to listen to that. "But all their works they do to be seen by men." If you go back to Matthew 6, remember on the Sermon on the Mount? Jesus talked about those charitable deeds that some would do, and he said, they do that, and they already have their reward, because their reward is to be seen by men. He said that in reference to the charitable deeds they did. He said that in reference to the prayers they offered, and he said that in reference to the fasting which they did. And he said, you know what? That's not what you ought to do, but that's what they do, and they have their reward. And Jesus said the same thing here. All their works they do to be seen by men. Let me just stop and suggest to us one application for us is if we do what we do to be seen by men, folks, our motives are wrong. And if that is the case, Jesus said, if that's why you do what you do, then that's what you're going to get. Whatever benefit that comes from men about what you do, that's going to be your reward. Because Jesus is not interested in rewarding that. He wants us to be humble, which is going to be the primary thrust of our lesson tonight. And he wants us to be different than these Pharisees were. But it was a statement and motivation and motive about why we do certain things. It was a strong statement that Jesus makes, and he makes it here in Matthew 23. And he wants them to be reminded of that. It's not the first time he said this to them, but he scolds them for doing things for the wrong reasons. And I think all of us just need to ask ourselves and make sure that the reasons we do what we do are not for our self-gratification or our self-glorification, but we do what we do to glorify God. And I'm going to tell you that sometimes that's not easy. And I'll tell you the group of people that have a difficult time with that. Preachers. Because preachers stand before groups of people, and they, most of the time, I hope that what we do is we try to do our best. But I want to tell you, there is some self-satisfaction that comes from that sometimes that if you're not careful, makes you something that you ought not be. And I think myself included have to be very careful about that. I have to be careful. As does anyone who teaches or who preaches, because that can so easily become the motivation. And Paul would talk about in the Corinthians especially, he said, that's not why we do what we do. And I'll say in front of you, God help me if that's ever my motivation, whether I'm preaching here or anywhere else, if that's ever my motivation, God help me and God do whatever it takes to cause in me to get that out of my mind. But it's not just preachers. It can be all of us to have this wrong motivation. And he says to them, they do those things to be seen by men. But I want you to notice something else. This is not a good picture, but Jesus then tells them in verse 11, this is what you ought to do. And he's talking, remember, to the disciples and the multitude, although there are some Pharisees and scribes no doubt here hearing this. But in verse 11 he says, but he who is greatest among you shall be your servant, and whoever exalts himself will be humbled, and he who humbles himself will be exalted. This has to do with humility and servitude. It has to be with the kind of attitude that we had. And what I notice about this is that Jesus didn't say that humility and servitude would make you good enough. I want you to think about this. What he said specifically was, he said it would make you the greatest. Jesus said it's going to make you the greatest among them or the greatest among those disciples. It's not that it's just something that you ought to do. He says if you're going to be the greatest, you need to be a person who's humble and a person who's willing to serve. And in verse 12, he says, whoever exalts himself will be humbled, and whoever humbles himself will be exalted. You may be sitting here tonight, and you may be thinking, you know, that's not really something that Christians need to worry about, and I would say just the opposite is true. I would say just the opposite. And while we may think ourselves to be something because we practice Christianity and we try to live according to what God wants us to do, that very attitude, if it permeates us and the wrong motive is present, it can take us places that it took the Pharisees. And Jesus reprimands them for that. He calls them, as we're going to see, he calls them all sorts of names, if you will, to help them understand what they were and what they were doing. So to further illustrate the problem, beginning in verse 13, he pronounces seven woes. Now, If you were to go through the rest of this chapter beginning in verse 13, you might say, well, Kenny, there's a lot more woes than just seven. Well, that's probably true, but some of those who have studied this pretty intently just say there are seven primary woes, and then he mentions some other things, and I just want you to run through those with me real quick. In verse 13, he says, but woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites. Verse 14, woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites. Verse 15, woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites. Do you notice a pattern? In verse 16, woe to you, blind guides. Verse 17, fools and blind. Verse 19, fools and blind. Verse 23, woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites. Verse 24, blind guides. Verse 25, woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites. Verse 26, blind Pharisee. Verse 27, woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites. Verse 29, woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites. I mean, he calls them vipers. Obviously, the Lord never sinned, but he calls them a lot of things to try to get their attention to primarily one thing, is that is, you're thinking too highly of yourself. And I think we can honestly say and pretty easily say that Jesus was a bit irritated. This is one of those series of statements that Jesus makes that I would love to have been there and heard it. You know, we have it recorded for us. But you know, I don't think Jesus said, woe to you scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites. Woe to you scribes. I think there was probably, it's my observation, my guess, there was probably some inflection in his voice the further he went on. I don't think you could call them blind fools and blind guides and blind Pharisees and not tend to raise your voice. But he's irritated. And what I want you to say, but he's irritated because of how they felt about themselves. And I am going to suggest to us tonight that if we're not careful, folks, the same thing that happens to them can happen to us. And we have to be people of humility. Now, that's illustrated, I think, in the best possible way in Luke 18. And I want you to turn there. We're going to look at a story. It's really a parable. It's a parable that's very familiar to you. But we're going to look at that parable tonight for just a few minutes, because I think it illustrates what Jesus is doing in Matthew 23 when he gets on them, when he berates them, when he tells them why they shouldn't be like they are. And I want us to notice, beginning in verse 9 of Luke 18, what Jesus says. Before I read this, let me just say, this has to do with prayer. Now, I think that what we're about to read has to do with the attitude of prayer, but let me just say this. Jesus talked a lot about prayer. He talked about the value. He talked about the benefit. He talked about how to do it. He talked about what not to do in it, what to do in it. He talked about it an awful lot. And the reason that I think he did is because he understood how important it was. And as I've said to you several times since I've been here, the reason that I pray primarily is because Jesus did. That's really the main reason I pray, because he did. And if he did, if he understood the value of that, being God, and he understood what his own Father could do, how much more should we be people of prayer? That being said, let's notice the attitude of prayer that's found beginning in verse 9 of Luke 18. Also, he spoke this parable to some who trusted in themselves that they were righteous and despised others. Jesus then said, two men went up to the temple to pray, one a Pharisee and the other a tax collector. The Pharisee stood and prayed thus with himself, God, I thank you that I'm not like the other men, extortioners, unjust, adulterers, or even as this tax collector. I fast twice a week. I give tithes of all that I possess. And the tax collector, standing afar off, would not so much as raise his eyes to heaven, but beat his breast, saying, God, be merciful to me, a sinner. I tell you, this man went down to his house justified rather than the other. For everyone who exalts himself will be humbled, and he who humbles himself will be exalted. I want you to notice, pardon me, first of all, who these two were. The Pharisee was one of the Jewish sects were the Pharisees. And at the most, at any one time, there were probably 6,000 people who were part of the Pharisees. But people recognize them, as I said to you earlier, they recognize them as people of the law. But what Jesus said is that they tortured the law with their pride and with their hypocrisy. That's what he got on to them for in Matthew 23. But yet people thought very highly of them, and that helped make them think of themselves pretty highly. And again, I think an application of that for us is, when people think of us as being religious, and maybe when people think of us as being somebody who is spiritually minded and somebody who is doing a great job spiritually, if you will, sometimes we need to be careful that that doesn't, in essence, go to our heads. And we exalt ourselves above where we ought to be. And if anything can help us where our place is in that, I think this parable can. So the first man who went up to pray was a Pharisee. And the second who went up to pray, this passage tells us, was a publican. He was a part of a group of infamous Jews who sold out to collect taxes for the Romans. And they got Rome's portion, and then they would squeeze their brethren, those other Jewish people. They would get what the Romans ought to get, and then they would squeeze their brethren, and it would irritate. And you can imagine. You know, I get irritated when I pay my taxes now because I feel like the government gets more than they ought to. But when you know you're being squeezed, when you know somebody is getting more out of you than ought, that would really make you mad. And so these publicans obviously were looked down upon. They were hated by the Jews. But these two prayers say a whole lot about each man. The Pharisee, I want you to notice the prayers of these men. The Pharisee stood. Do you notice what it says in verse 11? The Pharisee stood and prayed thus with himself. Have you ever noticed that? I know you've noticed what he says, but have you noticed what it says? He prayed thus with himself. What does that tell you about him? Even in the prayer, who does he have on his mind? He has himself on his mind and who he is on his mind. And so it says, this Pharisee stood and prayed thus with himself. And notice what the prayer says, verse 11 and 12. God, I thank you that I am not like other men, extortioners, unjust, adulterers, or even as this tax collector. I fast twice a week. I give tithes of all that I possess. What is this? It's just a soliloquy of self-congratulation. It's look who I am. Was it true? Was it true what he said here? Well, the Lord didn't challenge it. This is a parable. He says it's a parable. He spoke, verse 9 says he spoke this parable to some. But while it may be a parable, Jesus is stating what a Pharisee would have done. He would have said, this is what I do. And Jesus didn't challenge that. Not, he didn't challenge it at all. But what he says is, that's not enough. To do it's not enough. What Jesus says, it's a despicable attitude because you are exalting yourself. Notice what he says. He says, I thank you that I'm not like other men, extortioners, unjust, adulterers, and he gets very specific, or even as this tax collector. Can you imagine? Now, if you'll notice where the tax collector was standing, you remember in the latter part of this, where does it say he was? It says he was afar off. See, he probably didn't hear what the Pharisee said. But if he had heard, it would have probably irritated him because he was acting like all the Pharisees did, and he was saying, I'm glad I'm not like them. May I ask you a question? In the deep recesses of your mind sometime, there is a sense in which I am glad that I am not like other people. There is a sense in which that's true. I understand that. I think there is a sense in which we ought to be glad that we're not like other people. But it's not in this sense. It's not in this sense. It's not in this sense that tends to exalt oneself to say, I'm better than someone. Because of various reasons, maybe because of who I am or what I have or what I've done. Maybe various reasons, but that's the problem with the Pharisees. And the publican recognized who he was, and the Pharisee, unfortunately, didn't recognize who he was. The publican's prayer is very brief. You ever notice how many words it is? 7 words. I've heard some prayers before that probably would have been good if it had been kept to 7 words instead of 700 words. 7 words. What was the prayer? He says, God, be merciful to me, a sinner. And what I want you to notice about what he said was that what happens before that. The tax collector standing afar off would not so much as raise his eyes to heaven, but beat his breast. You ever beat your breast and play and prayed? I'm not suggesting that we manipulate something to cause us to look a certain way. I'm not suggesting at all. But what it says is this man understood who he was, especially in reference to God. And it caused him to do some things to himself. First of all, he didn't look up. It says he didn't look up to heaven, because he felt himself unworthy and beat his breast almost to punish himself for what he knew he had done and who he was. And I think all Jesus is doing here is saying, this is the attitude that you have to have. Anyone who thinks himself to be more than he ought to has misunderstood who he is. And Jesus uses this illustration, I think, to say that. So in verse 14, this is what he says. And I love it when Jesus explains parables. And so he does in verse 14. He says, I tell you, this man went down to his house justified rather than the other. For everyone who exalts himself will be humbled, and he who humbles himself will be exalted. You remember what he said in Matthew 23, what Jesus said? He said that very same thing. When we talk about humility, we talk about the opposite of that, which is pride. It seems to me that that is one of the things that can affect us in a way that it shouldn't, that pulls us down. I'm not suggesting that we don't need to be excited and in the right sense proud of what we may have accomplished spiritually, but that's not the attitude, not in a sense, that's not the attitude that Jesus is talking about. And when what we are and who we are and what we've accomplished gets to a point where it's affecting us in an adverse way, Jesus said, those kind of people will be humbled. They'll be humbled. And I love the spirit with which Jesus says, a person who is living as God wants him to live. I love this humility. I want you to look at a passage over in James 4. Turn your New Testaments over to James 4. James is one of those letters that's, in my judgment, very hard to outline, because he just jumps to a lot of different things. And it's almost as if he's saying different things that come to his mind that he wants him to understand. So in James 4, verse 7, this is what James would say. The heading in my Bible at the top of verse 7 says, humility cures worldliness. I'm not altogether in agreement that always those subheadings are good and they're even right, but I think in this case, it's a pretty good answer. In verse 7, James would say this, therefore submit to God, resist the devil, and he will flee from you. Draw near to God, and he will draw near to you. Cleanse your hands, you sinners, and purify your hearts, you double-minded. Lament and mourn and weep. Let your laughter be turned to mourning and your joy to gloom. Humble yourselves in the sight of the Lord, and He will lift you up. What you see here, folks, is a submission. He's not saying don't be grateful for what God has given to you, what you become. He's not saying don't beat yourselves up. He's not saying beat yourselves up because of who you are. But he's saying if you remain humble and appreciative for what God has done, and when you do fall, when you understand who you are in reference to God, here's what you do in verse 9, you lament and you mourn and you weep. Let your laughter be turned to mourning and your joy to gloom. Humility forces that in people who are spiritually minded. So there's no room. There's no room for me to exalt myself about what it is that I've done or what it is that I've accomplished or what it is that somebody might say. There's no room for that, because that's the wrong motivation. And God says, if that's why we do what we do, Jesus said, you've got your reward. I'm not going to reward it. But you have. There'll be some favorable thing happens to you, because there'll be some reward that comes from it, but it's not going to be the reward that you want, because it's not a reward that is given because of a humble spirit. And so he says, humble yourselves in the sight of the Lord, and he will lift you up. It's not just for those of us who may be Christians to think about that. It takes a humility of heart to come to God in the first place. When I encourage people, as I'm going to do now, when I encourage people to respond to the gospel, the one primary thing that keeps people from doing that is a spirit that says, I don't need God. And if you're here tonight and you're not in a right relationship to God, it probably is because you are, in essence, exalting yourself above God and you're not humbling yourself. You have to do that. And I would encourage you tonight to consider that very carefully. And humble yourself and give yourself to God. That's what you must do. And I would encourage all of us folks to do. It is something that I think all of us need to be constantly warned about. And so I would do that tonight for all of us. I pray that the lesson has been helpful to you. Again tonight, if you have a spiritual need that we can help you with, we'd love to assist you and help you in any way we can. If you'll let it be known by coming forward as we stand and as we sing. There's a line that is drawn.